This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Keeping the Faith this afternoon, we are talking live with Lutheran pastor John Sederlund, who is in the Palestine territories outside Jerusalem, a town called Bet Jala. Welcome, John. Can you hear me all right? Are you there, John? We have John Sederlund on the phone. John, can you hear me? We're having a few technical problems. We'll work on that and try to reestablish that contact. We had John just before the program started. Can you hear me now, John? Not yet. Okay. Well, we'll try to solve the technical problems. As listeners can well imagine, it's an exciting thing to look forward to talking to someone in the Holy Land on Palm Sunday. We're talking with a Christian pastor, a Protestant, a Lutheran pastor, John Sederlund. He's been in Palestine now since last August, and we had a trial run with this phone call. Of course, it's a satellite call. But it worked fine when we practiced and when we made connection before the program actually started. So we'll work on that technical problem. We have an engineer who's working on that right now. For listeners, let me tell you what's coming up on future Keeping the Faith programs. Next week, we have a call that's only going to Chicago. We'll be talking on April 8th. With some Muslim representatives from the Niagara Foundation in Chicago that works for intercultural and interreligious understanding. But they promote dialogue, they promote conversations, they encourage trips to other countries. For example, we had someone speak at the Wise Friday Forum last week, Professor Ken Sawyer from Chicago, who went to Turkey, a 98% Muslim country. He teaches in a Christian seminary, and he was reporting about that last Friday on Friday Forum. I understand we do have our guest on today. John Sederlund, can you hear me?
Speaking.
Ah, yes. Great. Glad you're able to be on the program via satellite radio and telephone. Tell us, what time is it where you are?
Well, it's 1 o'clock in the morning, Monday morning.
And you have just celebrated Palm Sunday. Where were you during the day?
Well, this morning, our own church here in Beit Jala had a Palm Sunday service, which is similar to what I've experienced in the United States with children carrying in palm branches and singing hosannas and things. And then after that, I took the bus into Jerusalem and to the Mount of Olives, where there's an international gathering of pilgrims from all over the world that meet at the church located in the village of Bethphage, which is on the east side of the Mount of Olives. And we gathered there, I would say, several thousand people, and we then slowly walked in procession to the top of the hill and then down the west side towards the Garden of Gethsemane and towards the city of Jerusalem.
What was the weather like for Palm Sunday in Jerusalem?
Well, it was sunny most of the day. A few clouds came over and a few sprinkles of rain, but it was cool and a bit breezy, so it was comfortable to be outside.
Now, you are living with a Lutheran congregation, a Lutheran mission in the Palestinian area near Jerusalem. How far away is Bet Jala?
Bet Jala is about less than 10 miles from the Mount of Olives. So, in fact, you can see the Mount of Olives from part of our one of the hills in our town.
How large is your town?
Bet Jala is a town of about, I think they tell me, 17,000 people.
And what percentage might be Christian in that town?
Well, this is one of the unusual towns in the Palestinian territories because it's predominantly Christian. 80% of this city of Beit Jala is Christian, and 20% is Muslim.
And what varieties of Christian are in Beit Jala?
Well, we have, of course, our Lutheran church, which is one of the smaller. And there are two Greek Orthodox churches and one Roman Catholic church. So there are four churches here in our town.
Now,
and there's also a mosque.
And it's that area, that town is 20% Muslim. What about the surrounding area? What about the next town?
Well, we are right next door to Bethlehem, which is considerably larger, about 45,000 people. And this whole area, Bethlehem and its, if you want to call them suburbs, Greater Bethlehem is about 60% Muslim.
Now, when we arranged to have this interview live here on Keeping the Faith for this particular Sunday and you agreed to be up late at night, did you know you'd be going into Jerusalem?
Well, I wasn't sure of it. I knew that they would be having this this massive procession, and I would like to. I had planned, or I knew I would like to attend. I wasn't sure if my local schedule would permit it, and I'm happy to say that it did.
Now, how difficult is it to get these 10 miles from your town, Beit Jala, into Jerusalem, given the new security concerns of the Israelis, the wall, the construction of the wall, and the checkpoints and so forth?
Well, today it went fairly smoothly. It took me only about half an hour to get there. I ride the intercity bus, and they do stop the bus at a checkpoint, and we get off the bus, and we have to show our papers to validate that we have a passport or the permission papers that are necessary to travel back and forth between Jerusalem and the West Bank.
Now, as traveling as you are on an American passport, is that easier than for people who carry Palestinian IDs?
Yes, it's much easier. They didn't even look at my passport. They can tell I'm not a Palestinian just by looking at me, and they just sort of waved me on by.
So what would one of your colleagues, who is a Christian, perhaps a Lutheran in Beit Jala, but Palestinian, Arab, what if they wanted to go to Jerusalem today for Palm Sunday? What would their experience have been like?
Well, they would have to apply in advance for written permission from the Israeli government, which would maybe take like 2 weeks, and they would have to get those permission papers from the government office in hand and have them with them when they traveled. And besides that, they would not be able to take the city bus that I rode on. They would have to go into the city of Bethlehem and walk through one of the big checkpoints.
And these security measures have been increased during your 6 months there or since your last visit to Jerusalem?
Well, I haven't. In the last couple of weeks, I don't think there has been much change. It seems like the division barrier, the wall or the fence or whatever you call it, is getting bigger, and it is construction is going on with this. It's being extended in length, and it's also being extended in permanence, so that and some of the roads are being closed off. We used to be able to make a shorter route coming from Jerusalem to Beit Jala, and now we have to go a longer way because one of the intersections has been closed off to the buses.
We're talking about keeping the faith. I'm sorry. We're talking about keeping the faith this afternoon live from Beit Jala in the Palestinian territories near Jerusalem with Lutheran pastor John Sutherland, who formerly was a campus pastor here at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign and served other Lutheran churches in this region before his retirement when he became a volunteer missionary in a boys' school that we'll be talking about a little bit later on the program. Listeners who have questions or comments who'd like to be part of our conversation, do give us a call. In Champaign-Urbana, the number is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Elsewhere, the toll-free number to join our conversation is 1-800-222-9455. Please notice that those are different numbers than if you listeners would like to make a pledge to WILL. As you know, this is a listener-supported public radio station. Over a third of our support comes from listeners for all of our programs. I happen to be a volunteer for this hour, but of course most of the voices you hear are people that receive well-deserved salaries. Nothing extravagant, I promise you. But if you'd like to make a contribution, those phone numbers are 244-9455 to make a contribution, or toll-free 1-1-866-779-9455. So that will get you in touch, be able to make a pledge, or can you make a pledge online at willpledge.org, willpledge.org. I see we have a caller already waiting to talk with John Sutherland on line number one. Yes, go ahead.
Hi. Boy, this is a miracle to talk to somebody in the Holy Land. I remember one time, we were there in the 80s, and I thought, boy, when I came back, it's true, it's true. I wonder if John has the same experience about it being true, and I would love to have that question answered. Bravo for your bravery. Bye-bye.
So what kind of experience have you had, shall we say, spiritually in the Holy Land as a Christian pastor who's now walking around in that territory?
Well, I must say I was somewhat impressed, very much impressed today with the Palms procession, especially since it is represented almost entirely by people, the Christian, Arab Christian communities of this area and their supporters from around the world that are that feel oppressed and that are hoping for some kind of a redemption of their society and of their nation. And I think that this is similar to the cries and the songs that were probably sung on the original Palm Sunday. So it is interesting to see these places, to know that the stories we remember from our religious training are stories about real people that happened in real places. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to comment on the first Palm Sunday in Christian story. The Jewish people at the time were oppressed by a powerful Roman government.
Right.
And when Jesus came in and there were came in riding a donkey or horse, whatever it was, there were cries of Hosanna, the King. What's the political situation there for Arab Christians now in a predominantly Jewish country?
Well, the Arab people feel very, very oppressed and lacking in hope and power and much freedom and independence. All these things seem to be missing from their experiences, and they are crying out in desperation many times for improvement in their status, both as a people and in their hopes for the future.
If there were peace and not the kind of suicide bombing and other kind of bombing violence that has happened in attacks on Jewish folks in Israel, would the circumstances be different?
Yes, I think so. I think that the outbursts of violence have, in fact, given reason for the building of walls and the controlling of transportation travel and of the clamps that are put on the commerce and the industry of the people, of the Palestinian people. I think it would make a difference.
We have another caller with a comment or question on line number one again. Go ahead. You're talking with John Sutherland.
Yes, John, I have a question as to whether you, in the people with whom you meet and encounter regularly, whether you discover much optimism for sort of an honestly brokered and just peace between Palestine and Israel at this point.
I must admit, I don't think that there is much optimism. I think that hopelessness and despair are far more predominant and evident in the daily lives of the people. They don't think that anyone is fighting their cause for them. They feel that unfortunately, they feel that the United States, above all, is supportive of the oppression that is afflicting them.
Did you want a follow-up caller?
No, that's fine. Thank you.
Appreciate the call. Let me give the numbers again. If you'd like to join this conversation, 333-9455 if you're in the Champaign-Urbana area. And, of course, this time of year, this program is heard all the way to Chicago and Indianapolis, points in between. So if you want to call toll-free, 1-800-222-9455. That includes listeners on the Internet at the station website, will.uiuc.edu. Folks listening online can also use their telephones to call us to join the in what we're talking about. John, when you first arrived at Bet Jala, what were you asked to do?
Well, a year ago when I was visiting here, the staff asked, the pastor particularly asked me if I would come and assist him in volunteer work in the congregation. It was sort of an open-ended invitation. When he found out that I was interested especially and had some skills and experience in music, then he jumped on that bandwagon right away and said, well, maybe you could do some music instruction. So that has ended up to be my specific duty here is to teach music. I'm giving organ lessons to a number of people, and I'm assisting with a music program in the church as well.
Now tell us about the boys' home.
Yeah, our church sponsors a residence for schoolboys. Now, I know at times I've called it a school. We do not have a school here, but we have a home for boys who go to school in the various elementary and secondary schools in our area. So we have, I think, around 35 boys living on our in our dormitory here, ages 5 to 18. And these are children who, for one reason or another, are not, it is not possible for them to be living in at home with families. Either they live at a great distance or there are sociological or economic reasons that they are not able to live at home with families. And so this has become their home.
How big is the Lutheran congregation that is there at the home that supports and works with the boys?
I think the congregation has about 500 members, so it's not a very large congregation. I should add it's one of six congregations in the synod or the convention of the Lutheran Church in the Middle East. There are only six congregations, and Beit Jala is one of them.
And are the services conducted in Arabic?
Yes, they are.
And when you preach there as a guest pastor, you speak in English and your sermon is translated?
Yes, translated sentence by sentence or paragraph by paragraph as we go.
We have another caller waiting for our guest. Okay. You're on Keeping the Faith. You're on Keeping the Faith with our guest, John Sutherland. Yes, go ahead, caller.
Hello?
Yes.
I had a question for John about some practical issues about getting around in Bet Jala. I know I'm acquainted with John. We're friends, and I know that he has some needs for the ministry that he's involved in. I would remind everyone that John is a volunteer over there in doing the work that he is. Do you want to say anything about that, John?
I'm not you mean about the...
Well, your transportation is always an issue over there, I understand, and also recreational kind of things.
Okay.
A safe place for these boys to be.
Yeah, our church, like all the churches in the area, are supported from outside sources. Steve was right when he said it's a mission church. Although it's an indigenous church that is organized and operated by local people, it is not funded locally, because there simply are not funds in the locale. Two of the things that I have mentioned to some of my friends is that our boarding house could well use a van, a minivan of some sort, so that we could transport larger numbers of boys to various activities that we provide for them. So that is one project we have going. And then we have a bigger project that we desperately need a recreational center. These kids have no place to play, except we have a very small courtyard between our boarding home and the church building itself, stone-lined, and that's the only place they have to play ball and so forth, and it's really not adequate at all. And we're hoping that we could build a recreational facility, a small gymnasium, and a few facilities like that on our own property here adjacent to the building.
Let's talk a little bit about the economic situation there. When you say the congregations in this part of Palestine simply don't have the money to support their own congregation in this boys' home, why is that?
Well, it is. I suppose it's been true that this part of the world has never been wealthy, and with its own natural resources. But since the partition of the land and the separation barrier and the restrictions on travel, commerce has sunk to huge deficits. And in this area, in the Bethlehem area, unemployment is about at 75%. So there simply is no money in the pockets of the people. The people that are employed make barely enough to keep food on their tables. So the operation of a church or any other organization, as I mentioned, has to be funded through other means. And in this case, the churches are supported by Christian congregations around the world, especially in Europe, and somewhat from the United States as well.
Our caller may still be on the line. Did you have another question, sir? He's dropped off. That's fine. The lines are open for those who'd like to make a call. Toll-free 1-800-222-9455 if you have a question. In Champaign-Urbana, there are several local lines, 333-9455. And then, of course, we have this separate phone line for our guest who's talking with us live from Bet Jala, which is kind of a suburb of Bethlehem, about 10 miles from Jerusalem. And we're talking about what was going on there on Palm Sunday earlier today. It's now 1:30 in the morning, and our guest is... Did you stay awake, John, or did you go to sleep and then wake up again?
No, I've been up. I made myself a good, strong cup of coffee, and I'm doing quite well.
Well, kind of you to do this. Let's go to another caller on line number one. You're on Keeping the Faith. Yes, go right ahead. Line number one. Can you hear me? Yes, line number one. Is there a caller there? We're not getting anything on line number one. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yes, go ahead with your question.
Yes, it's not a question. I just wish to send Pastor Sutherland greetings from Southern Champaign County, Philo Sutton area.
Thank you very much.
Well, good of you to call. Do you have a connection with the Philo Sidney area in southern Champaign County?
Yes, I have sung in Pastor Sutherland's church in Philo and an ecumenical group several years ago Easter time.
Well, thank you for calling. I'm sure he's delighted to hear your voice.
Mm-hmm.
And we have another caller waiting on line number two. Let's go to line number two. You're on Keeping the Faith, line two.
Thank you. Yes, I wanted to ask how contributions could be made for helping with this van for the students there at the school.
Well, I think that they could be sent either to I'm going to give you some initials. It's ELCJHL. And that stands for the Evangelical Lutheran Church of Jordan and the Holy Land.
And
that office is in at Redeemer Lutheran Church in Jerusalem.
In Redeemer Lutheran Church in Jerusalem. And if people wanted to find out more about that, is there a way they could do that online?
Oh, let's see. I think it is. I think their website is holyland-lutherans.org.
Okay, holyland-lutherans, L-U-T-H-E-R-A-N-S, .org.
.org.
All right. Very good.
I would encourage them to mail it to me, but because we live in the West Bank, we have no mail service. The funding has dried up, and our postal service is now defunct, at least temporarily.
Which makes things a little difficult.
Right.
We're glad the phone is working today.
Yes, yes. And email works fine, too.
And if people wanted to contact you via email, how might they do that?
Well, my email address is john.setterland.
Spell that, please.
S as in Sam, E-T-T-E-R-L-U-N-D, and that's at gmail.com.
G as A-B-C-D-F-G, gmail.com. Okay. John.Setterland at gmail.com is a way to contact our guest
right.
today. Let's talk a little bit more about what Palm Sunday was like there. When you talked about your service there at your church in Bet Jala,
mm-hmm.
The service was in Arabic. Would Christians in this country be able to follow the service, even though it's in a different language? Is it very similar?
Well, if you're familiar with traditional Lutheran liturgy, it is. Even though nothing is in English, I know when to stand up and sit down because they do the same things that we do. Of course, after several months, I'm beginning to become slightly familiar with what's actually going on.
Now, when you have communion there, there was communion this morning?
Yes.
What's that like in that culture?
Well, let's see.
What kind of bread is it?
They have a large piece of bread. It's unlike anything I've seen here. It's not pita bread. It's a large round piece of bread it's fairly soft, but it's thin. And we have one piece that must be about 15 inches across, and we break that then into enough pieces for everyone to eat.
Is it spongy like you would find in like Ethiopian restaurants? Is it more like a crepe than a bread?
No, it's thicker than a crepe.
Okay. All right. And is there wine or grape
yes,
juice?
There's wine.
Uh-huh.
There's wine. We do have celebrate communion every Sunday in this congregation.
Is it a locally produced wine?
Yes. We have a winery on the edge of town. That produces a very fine collection of wines and brandy. So we're very proud of that.
Now, with 75% unemployment in this part of Palestine, can you typically find food in grocery store, in stores? What's the food situation like?
Well, there seems to be enough food. The eating of meat isn't quite as regular as we're used to in the United States. There are some days that they don't serve meat. At our particular home here, and I eat with the boys in the boarding home, they never serve pork because many of our boys that live here are Muslims. And so to accommodate that, the pork is never served here.
Are there Jews who live in Bet Jala?
No, there are not. There seems to be a fairly clear segregation of Arabs and Jews. The Arabs include both Christians and Muslims, and there's very little mixing. Jews do not even come to visit.
What about in Bethlehem?
The same is true there, I think.
So,
I think someone said there's one family of Jewish people who live in Bethlehem.
So the nearest Jews to where you live now would be in Jerusalem.
Jerusalem. And then there are Jewish settlements scattered here and there throughout the West Bank, some of which are rather close here.
What is the feeling among people in your congregation towards Jews? These are Arab Christians who are worshiping Jesus, a Jew. and yet they feel oppressed by the Jewish government of Israel right now. How do they reconcile all of that?
Well, there's I can't say there's no hostility, but I think that most of them recognize that Jewish people are not necessarily the same as the Israeli government. And I would compare that to the fact that they, and to my own justification, that they like Americans as well, but they don't necessarily agree with American governmental policies. They know there's a difference in any country between the government and the citizens. And I think that's how many people feel towards the Jewish people as people and Israel as a government.
And how do the Arab Christians, Palestinian Christians in your town react to their own Palestinian government and some of the groups in that area who do perpetuate violence against the Jewish people?
They sort of wring their hands in disbelief at what their own government is unable to do, that the government is just ineffective. I must say they do feel, however, that the present government never was given a chance by the rest of the world. And that by that they mean that within the shortest of times, after the Hamas party was elected, which is a little over a year ago, that the economic boycotts took place from America and the European countries, and the government has simply not been able to function. As I mentioned, the Postal Service has ceased. When I first arrived here, the public schools were not in operation because the teachers hadn't gotten paid from April through September, and so they quit work. And fortunately, they came back online by, I think, around the 1st of November, so the public schools are now operating again. But the feeling is that their government, shaky and disorganized as it is, was not given a fair chance to even attempt to rule.
And how much of the current poverty is a result of the economic boycott?
Oh, a great deal of it. I would say most of it is.
We're talking live with Pastor John Setterland, who is serving a Lutheran church as a volunteer in the Palestinian territories, 10 miles from Jerusalem. What direction are you from Jerusalem?
We're on the south edge.
South edge.
Yeah, so if you have a map that shows Jerusalem, look south of that, and it'll show Bethlehem. And we are immediately west of Bethlehem.
How far from Bethlehem?
Well, our cities border on each other.
Okay.
It takes when I go to Bethlehem, when I walk to Bethlehem, it takes me about 25 minutes to get from where I am in Beit Jala to the central part of Bethlehem.
Let me give the phone numbers for listeners who'd like to ask John a question. 333-9455 in Champaign-Urbana will get you several local lines. Elsewhere, toll-free 1-800-222-9455. And let me remind listeners that those are different numbers than if you wish to make a pledge, which we, of course, encourage listeners to Keeping the Faith to do. WRL is having a much shortened pledge drive this spring. It goes only till Tuesday evening, but you still have a chance to make a very important contribution to the future of this radio station and, of course, WRL FM and TV as well. If you'd like to make a pledge, do call 244-9455 or a toll-free line for pledging 866-779-9455. The last four numbers are always WILL. Just make note of the different ones. The goal for this pledge drive is $225,000. We do try to raise about a third of the budget for this public radio station from listeners' support. My wife and I have already made our contribution this year and encourage other listeners to do that. Well, getting back to our guest, we have a caller I see on the toll-free line. Let me make sure our engineer has that one ready to go here. Not quite yet. In the meantime, let me tell listeners what's coming up here on Keeping the Faith next week. We'll be talking with representatives of the Niagara Foundation, a group of Muslims in Chicago who work with the Intercultural Friendship Foundation here in Champaign-Urbana, encouraging interfaith conversations and visits and better understanding. They will be our guests next Sunday on April 8. The following Sunday, April 15, we'll be talking about green burials, environmentally friendly ways to bury folks, with Kimberly and Billy Campbell on April 15. I think we have, yes, we do have line four ready now. You're on Keeping the Faith. Go ahead, please. Line number four. Yes, are you there?
Yes, I went to Bethlehem in about 1976. And I remember going to the Church of the Nativity, and I recall that the door into the church was shorter because of the Crusaders, I think. The horses couldn't go in there, but anyhow, I remember going into that big church, seeing a part of the mosaic floor, and then going down some staircase to the place where they believe that Jesus was born.
Correct.
Is that still possible,
and is that
still the experience?
Yes, it is. And you still hit your head on that door because it was lowered. If you're not careful, you'll bump your head on the big stone.
Mm-hmm. And on the floor was a piece of marble, and there was like a star on the floor. With a lot of lanterns over it.
Correct.
Is that still there?
It is, indeed. Yes, and tourists still flood in there every day. People come to see this holy site in Bethlehem.
Do you know, is there a particular church that takes care of that site?
The Greek Orthodox Church has the main responsibility there. The Armenian Orthodox Church also has a side chapel in that building. And then attached to it, in another building but attached, is a Roman Catholic Church of St. Catherine, which is the church that broadcasts Midnight Mass at Christmas Eve every year on television.
Mm-hmm. Would you care to, then I'll hang up, would you care to comment about the Crusade period during when the Crusades hit Bethlehem, and did they bring a lot of ruin to that church, or was that anything that you have on that? I'm just interested in the Crusades' effect upon Bethlehem, and I'll hang up. Thank you.
Right. Well, happily enough, the Church of the Nativity in Bethlehem was the only church that was that survived intact from the earliest days, that was not destroyed either by the Crusaders or by the Persian invaders before that, or by the Muslims or anybody else. Along the way, that it is one of the better preserved ancient churches. That the mosaic floor that you mentioned that you saw dates back to the Justinian times, which I think was the fourth or fifth century. And so it's an extremely ancient place. And as far as the Crusades in general, it was one of the dark pages on the history of the Christian church.
John, when you talk about tourism and that there are still tourists who go to Bethlehem to see the Church of the Nativity where Jesus was born, perhaps, in that location, how much has tourism been affected by the violence?
It's suffering a great deal. Virtually none of the tourists stay overnight in Bethlehem anymore. It's the hotels. I would say half the hotels in Bethlehem have closed their doors because they no longer have the tourist trade that they used to have. In general, the tourism industry tells pilgrims that it is not safe to come to the West Bank to visit, and that Christian tourists should not come to these places. Well, I beg to differ. It is safe, and they desperately need the tourism, and they are worth it, and they receive tourists very warmly in Bethlehem and Beit Jala and all the places around here.
How safe have you felt?
Extremely safe. I have not In fact, the only armaments I see are on the Israeli guards at the borders and checkpoints.
Have there been terror bombings in Jerusalem since you've been there last August?
No, there haven't. The suicide bombing rate has decreased, I think, completely in this area. Unfortunately, there is violence down in Gaza, which is, 50, 60 miles from here. I haven't been there, and I probably would not be permitted to go there because of security reasons, which are well-founded, I guess. But it is extremely safe here. So if that's due to the security measures that have been taken, thanks be to God for that. If it is due to a better spirit, that would even be better.
We're talking live by phone to John Sutherland outside of Jerusalem, about 10 miles, and it's 1:30 in the morning there after Palm Sunday. When you went into Jerusalem earlier today and went to the Mount of Olives for the procession, what kind of palms are used?
Actual branches off of the palm trees. I didn't take anything with me, although several people on the city bus riding up to the Mount of Olives had already brought their palms, presumably from their church services. I didn't even think to do that, but as soon as I stepped out into the street, the little street urchins came running up to sell them. So I paid 10 shekels and got a nice big palm branch from a little boy, which I was happy to carry, and I brought home with me.
The Christian celebration of Holy Week that begins with Palm Sunday and extends all this week to Easter around the world often includes readings of the Christian Gospels. And this has often been a week of fear by Jewish people who have often been victimized by Christians, where Christians are in the majority as they remember Holy Week. What's the sense of that in Palestine and Israel?
I think that the city of Jerusalem was on guard. There were police all over the place, Israeli police, watching and monitoring this activity this afternoon. And although I saw no violence or did not even see anything that bordered on a political protest of any sort, I can understand that there was a nervous tension, and I myself felt, with all that excitement and all those people crowded into these streets, it wouldn't take much of a spark to light off some violence. So I'm glad that I can understand why the city of Jerusalem had its police force out in full visibility today. Happily enough, things went very peacefully.
When you got back to Beit Jala, what was the feeling there? Were you with other Christian groups, families, or by yourself? Or what was it like to be back after you came back from Jerusalem?
Well, I came back to the church and the boarding home, and they just said, "Where were you?" And so I explained that I had gone to Jerusalem. They saw my palm, so they knew what I had been doing, and most of them wished they could have gone, but many didn't have permission to go, so they didn't even really think or plan to go.
We have another caller waiting on line number one. You're on Keeping the Faith with our guest, Pastor John Sutherland.
Yes. My question, we were there about 20 years ago, you said it wasn't as dangerous now. I wonder if it's as dangerous as it was then, and 20 years ago and now. That's my question.
I don't understand the question.
And 20 years ago, did you have as much danger as you do now?
I've only been here since September.
Okay.
But I think that people who have traveled back and forth many times do say that it was that there was not the tension 20 years ago or longer ago than that, and that it has gradually built over the years because of various revolutions and intifadas and restrictions and so forth, that the tension is increasing each year.
Thank you for the question. In terms of the new security efforts by the Israelis, particularly with the wall or the barrier or the fence, what does it look like?
Well, around Bethlehem, it is a sheer concrete wall about, I think, between 20 and 30 feet high. And it follows a very irregular course. They like to use the word it snakes through the country because it curves around many plots of land and through the cities, through the various lots and so forth. So it is, it's very foreboding. There are guard towers every so often. One of the interesting parts of it is that on the Palestinian side of this, it is painted with graffiti, some of which are very interesting. Most of them are just simply writing, but some rather artistic drawings have appeared, and I've tried to take a few photos of them, and I sent some, in fact, this week, past week, to some of my friends to give a feeling for the size and the sort of the awesomeness of this barrier fence. In the countryside, some places it's a chain link fence, and it is that's probably only 10 or 12 feet high. But through the city, which is what we see because we're in basically a built-up part of the country, it is this very high, prison-like wall.
So when you go from Beit Jala today on Palm Sunday to Jerusalem, how far did you go before you encountered this wall?
Well, it is not closed. We didn't actually go through the wall itself because it is not completed. It's right through Beit Jala. We can see where they're planning to build it, and it's unfortunately, we're anticipating that the day will come when this wall is complete, that we will not be able to take the roads that we are now driving, but that we will have to go through the checkpoint located in the city of Bethlehem, which is, as I said, you must walk through and go through turnstiles, metal detectors, passport control desks, and so forth. But for right now, we do not. For me to go from Beit Jala to Jerusalem, I do not have to pass through the wall itself.
It seems incongruous that you're able to talk with us by phone. You're able to send emails, including photographs you've taken of the wall and other places in your area, and yet it's so restricted and so poor. How is this possible?
It's poor because the funding is not coming from the outside like it used to. The funding for utilities, the funding for municipal functions, the subsidies for industry and so forth. Products cannot travel freely through these borders. Workers cannot go to Jerusalem to work. In many cases, as I mentioned, unemployment is at 75% in this area, and that is mainly because the people who depend on Jerusalem for their employment are no longer able. Many of them are no longer able to go there and work.
So we're lucky we have a good phone connection because, as you say, the Postal Service has had to shut down. So.
Right. Yes, sir.
Well, I'm grateful. For listeners who'd like to receive your Beit Jala journal electronically via email, they may email you, you had said, at John, J-O-H-N, dot Setterlund, S-E-T-T-E-R-L-U-N-D, at gmail.com. That's the letter G and then M-A-I-L.com. If you'd like to receive a every 2 week journal, very short but very interesting, from John Setterlund, during this year of volunteering there on the West Bank. John, tell us, why is it called the West Bank? It's actually east of Jerusalem.
Yes, that name, and by the way, all the names for these areas are very controversial and politically
charged.
Politically charged, yes. The name West Bank was given I hope I get my dates right. I think from about 1949 to 1967, this was territory belonging to the nation of Jordan, which is east of here, across the Jordan River and the Dead Sea. And so we were the West Bank of Jordan. That's where that name comes from. Then in the 1967 war, Israel occupied this territory, and Jordan gave it up.
And that was not a when you talk about that war, some of our younger listeners may have no memory of that. Can you tell a little bit about it?
Well, I didn't. My history isn't all that good either. But in 1967, Israel occupied the West Bank of Jordan and the Gaza Strip, which was then under the control of Egypt, and the Golan Heights, which was part of Syria. And through their fantastically powerful military strength, were able to hold on to these.
And of course, our Israeli friends would tell us that action was in response to them having been attacked. So,
right.
In terms of history, it's so hard to get an accurate understanding of what's happened when and whose fault various things are. Do you have any books to recommend?
One book that I have found very helpful and quite inspiring was The History of the City of Jerusalem by Karen Armstrong, called One City, Three Faiths. I think that's the name of it. And I read this some years ago and found it to be fascinating, easy to follow because it is limited to just one location, and that is the city of Jerusalem. Of course, that we feel like we're part of that area too here. And it goes back from, actually prehistoric times up to about, I think she covered it until about 1967 or so.
We're down to our last 4 or 5 minutes, which I'm sure you're grateful for, since it's been a very long day for you. And we thank you again for staying up so late.
My pleasure.
If we might be able to sneak in one or two more calls, so 333-9455 in Champaign-Urbana, elsewhere toll-free, 1-800-222-9455. I mentioned earlier that this program is sponsored in part by the University YMCA, where I'm the executive director. My name is Steve Shoemaker. We do have several programs coming up this week. The Know Your University program, sponsored in part by the Office of the Chancellor here at the university. On April 3rd, this Tuesday noon, we'll have an Edible Books Festival at the Y at noon. It's free. Come and enjoy some food that's related to books, maybe even in the shape of books. That's Tuesday at noon, Know Your University. This Friday, Forum week, Don Shriver, former president of Union Theological Seminary in New York, will be talking about an ethic for enemies. I wanted to particularly get this in so John could hear what's coming up. Forgiveness and politics. President Shriver will be talking about that Friday at the Y, April 6th at noon. We have a couple callers waiting. Line number one. Go ahead, please.
Is that me?
Yes.
Hi. I just wanted to recommend a book that previous caller called in. Elias Shakur, who is, I believe he's Orthodox, he's Christian, and his whole village was destroyed in 47 or 49 when the Israelis took over, and he built schools in the Palestinian territories, and the name of his book is Blood Brothers. It's a very moving account, and I think pretty fair.
Thank you very much. Blood Brothers Shakur. And we have another caller on line number two. Yes, go ahead.
Yes, I'd like to ask Pastor Sutherland if he's had any experiences in areas around the country besides the Jerusalem area, or if he plans to travel there later.
Where have you traveled, John?
I have been up north to the Galilee area, visited a group of Christians not far from the Lebanon border. They had become familiar with Beit Jala a year ago when the Lebanon-Israeli war was raging over their heads, and they fled, in fact, down south here, and they stayed at our guest house. Our church operates a small hotel, a guest house as well, and they lived here for a couple of weeks during that time, and we were invited back to visit them. I had a wonderful time up there. Besides that, I've made quick trips to Nazareth and to Haifa, but I think that's, and to Masada, which is down by the Dead Sea. Those are, and Jericho, I've been to those places. Previous trips I have traveled around. In 1998, I was here for a six-week Bible study, Bible study in Jerusalem. We traveled most of the country at that time. So I have seen an awful lot of places, but not on this particular trip.
Thank you, caller, for those questions. John, thanks again for staying up so late.
You're
and
welcome.
For being with us live from the Holy Land for three different faiths on this Palm Sunday for Christians and sharing with us some of your experiences.
We appreciate your interest.
Thank you so much for being on the phone. Have a nice sleep finally.
Bye.
John Sutherland live from the Holy Land here on Keeping the Faith. Listeners who would like to be on the email journal list for John may go to john.sutherland@gmail.com. My name is Steve Shoemaker, the host for Keeping the Faith. Most times I'll remind people that next week we'll be talking with some Muslim guests by phone from Chicago about the Intercultural Friendship Foundation and the work of the Niagara Foundation that works for interfaith cooperation, understanding through dialogue, conversation, and travel. And our guests on April 15 again will be the Campbells, Kimberly and Billy, talking about green burials. That should be very interesting. Later in April, Christians and Jews in World War II Poland with our guest Bill Timaeus, a former current religious columnist for the Kansas City Star. Coming up at the Y this Wednesday will be an open house. If you've never been to the University Y, it'd be a good opportunity to come by sometime between 10 and 6. Around noon, we'll be having a banner drop from the building. It should be interesting with some fun music. That's Wednesday noon at the Y, 1001 South Wright Street in Champaign. Thank you for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keeping the Faith, a production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Join us Monday from 10 a.m. to noon for Focus 580 with your host, David Inge. Monday's topic for both hours is books, and David will have guests from Pages for All Ages Bookstore, the University of Illinois Department of English, and the Champaign Public Library. They'll be on hand to tell you about books they like and find out about those you recommend. And we'll have our Big Pledge Drive book giveaway. So don't miss a minute, Monday from 10 to noon, here on AM 580, WILL Urbana. Tonight in Champaign-Urbana, mostly clear with a low in the mid-40s, breezy with southwest winds 25 to 30 miles per hour, decreasing to 10 to 15 miles per hour after midnight. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with a high in the lower 70s and south winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy with a low in the mid-50s and south winds 10 to 15 miles per hour.
Support for WILL comes from World Gourmet Foods, now celebrating their first anniversary on Krispy Kreme Drive in Bloomington. World Gourmet features daily tasting, and on Saturday, April 14th, an extended tasting of more than 200 items, including specialty cheeses, rare and origin-protected extra virgin olive oils, aged balsamic vinegar, and more, on the web at worldgourmetfoods.com.
It's 6 p.m. This American Life is next.